Hashtag psychotherapy unfucked with Mark Fielding.
Hello, welcome to series 5, episode 2 of Hashtag psychotherapy unfucked. Staying with our series 5 theme of relationships, today we'll be talking with Joe Bula. And the relationship to the unconscious will be our subject. Joe is a holistic hypnotherapist and brings a lot of skills to the table, including NLP, CBT, nutrition, breath work, and Joe is also a personal trainer. So we'll do our best to get as many of those parts in today, but obviously we only have 40 minutes. Thank you so much for coming on, Joe.
Thank you very much for asking me. Yeah. It's lovely to come on and talk to you.
The first question I always ask our guests, and say as much or as little as you're happy with, is what are the personal experiences that led you into the field?
A lifetime of events. I've always been interested in psychology, the mind, from very young. I had a difficult childhood and experienced a very traumatic event at the age of 12, which at the time was undiagnosed, but I had post-traumatic stress disorder.
Okay.
That was the time, the era, circumstances just not dealt with, to the point that I wasn't actually allowed to even speak about it. So in my coping mechanism, I went on to develop an eating disorder, and then very early teens started drinking any available way to try and lose myself. But at the same time, I was quite interested and aware of how it was affecting me, how other people who had been around at the time were not suffering in the same way, how they were, how it was dealt with them, and how their outcome was quite different. So I suppose that would be the start of my interest. I then actually went down the route of becoming an actor. So went to 2 different drama schools. Again, I found that there was sort of two types of characters in those environments, ones that were very much themselves wanting to show off and look at me. And I was sort of completely in the other camp, whereas actually for myself, it was another form of losing myself, was actually becoming someone else. And along with the interest, real interest in what makes a character tick, how did they get to that point? Why are they behaving that way? So it's always been there. But then life sort of goes in different tangents. I had 3 children, so didn't work for a while. And then alongside all the time, sport has always been another release for me. I was a dancer. I've always loved movement. So again, I started to use physical activity as a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
Again, took it too far and was overtraining. But at the same time, all my children were involved in sports, and I was asked to start coaching young gymnasts. So that was the start of then why I went down the do this properly, went down the PT route, and eventually set up my business as a bar instructor, which is ballet, bar, Pilates, and yoga combined.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed that. But at the same time, there was lots of unresolved problems. And 2 years ago, I discovered the alcohol-free movement. It was something that I'd tried many, many times before, but actually gave up alcohol, and really that was a significant change in in addressing a lot of problems and facing a lot of problems rather than running away from them.
Yeah, and I guess the coping strategies, I mean, just to pull out a couple of them, I guess the eating disorder, you know, the kind of, I don't know, the alcohol. I mean, I guess it's an attempt to self-soothe. And, you know, I'm not going to ask you, and I don't obviously need you to talk about the trauma, but, you know, having undiagnosed PTSD, I mean, it must have been very, very confusing, because I guess you must have been feeling all sorts of feelings and really finding it difficult to make sense of them, and then needing the, you know, the coping strategies that came in. Yeah, and I guess with exercise and eating disorders, I mean, sometimes, yeah, that can slip into, you know, into more of the realm of the eating disorder and the body than, you know, than the exercise being good for mental health. But it seems like you've moved, you know, beyond that. And exercise and mental health is something I talk about loads on the show. I mean, it is one of the best things, isn't it, for mental health, for ADHD, for you name it. Physical exercise is so, so good. And then you moved into becoming a PT. I guess that was, yeah. I mean, you've got a well-established business, haven't you, as a personal trainer?
I have actually stopped teaching now, because unfortunately I sustained pelvic injury, fractured my pelvis, which made it really quite difficult continue. So that, coupled with lockdowns, I did sort of go online during that, but it was very difficult. So that's the point where I decided to retrain, and sort of after a couple of months of feeling a bit lost, I thought, you know, I had this feeling I wanted to give back, I wanted to do something. So that's when I then went back into studying. I'd already done psychology at A level, but then I sort of decided to go down the hypnotherapy route.
Yeah.
And that then sort of, I then trained as an alcohol free coach. I trained in CBT, I trained in breath work. It was very much about bringing all of those skills and life experience and knowledge together.
Yeah.
Thinking, you know, I have got something to share. I can actually help other people make some changes, positive changes in their life.
Yeah. And there's something about, you know, I mean, I say this probably too much on the show, you know, but there is something about, I think, transforming your own suffering into helping others, which I think is true of probably most of us in the kind of helping professions, you know. And I guess your love of psychology has always been there, you know, and I guess you've really built on that. I mean, just kind of moving into the hypnotherapy a little bit, could you, just for our listeners who maybe who are not aware of what hypnotherapy is, could you just say a little bit around what it is and what it looks like in the room?
Okay, yeah. I think hypnotherapy has, it's got a sort of sticky reputation, because a lot of people don't know what it is, and their only reference point is the sort of the stage hypnosis, which is not hypnotherapy. So they have this impression that somebody's sort of doing something a bit mystical, a bit magical, and they're going to make them do something that they don't want to do. Yeah. And actually, hypnotherapy is the complete opposite of that. So we have a, I was sort of explaining that our brain, our mind, if you think of it as an iceberg, great big iceberg, draw a little line at the top where the water is. And actually, that 5% of the brain at the top is our conscious mind, that we're making decisions throughout the day. We think with all of our knowledge, but actually that 95% of the mind that sits underneath that subconscious mind not only is running our physical body, we're not thinking about breathing, we're not thinking about our blood circulation or all of those things, but they're actually controlled by the mind. But also, that's where we store all of our information, everything that we've encountered and everything that we've learned.
Yeah.
But that part of the mind can't rationalize. It's a very animalistic, basic part of the mind. It doesn't think, well, you know, is this a good decision or not? It just, it learns. We're programmed to learn very, very quickly.
Yeah.
If you take us back to basic animal caveman time, it's very important to learn danger signals very quickly because they could kill you. So we tend to have a negative bias. We tend to learn those negative thought patterns very, very easily. And they're like computer programs just running in the background.
Yeah, definitely.
And they're forming our majority of our belief system about ourselves and the world and how we fit in there. And many of those belief systems kept us safe at a time where they were needed. But they might not be serving us now. They might be problematic now. We might have problems with eating, with drinking, with relationships, with self-confidence, with stress, with anxiety. All of those things might be a problem that actually is because of our relationship that we have with the world, because of this stored program that's running in the background. So there are so many different ways of accessing those stored programs. So cognitive behavioral therapy would be what I would call top-down thinking. So you're constantly changing your conscious thought patterns to eventually create new pathways in the subconscious. But hypnotherapy is so you go into a state of very deep relaxation. We actually go into states of hypnosis on a daily basis. So as you're falling asleep, that sort of half awake, half asleep state, or when you wake up, you're just waking up, you might hear a phone ringing or something, and it comes into your dream, that half dream state. So we're entering into that state two times a day at least, but you might get in a car and drive somewhere and get there and think, how, I don't remember this journey, how on earth did I get there?
Yeah, it's common. But
that is actually the state that we're getting into during hypnotherapy in hypnosis. So it's a very, very deeply relaxed state. But equally, you can come out of that. You get out of the car, that journey, for instance, and you come straight out of that state. You're not stuck in that state. There's not a risk or a fear that you can get stuck there. If you choose to come back into conscious thought, you can come back straight away. So in hypnosis, I'm really just a guide to take you down into that deep state of relaxation, where you can become very, very focused, quietening that 5%, that conscious part of the mind, and accessing that subconscious part of the mind.
Yeah.
And that's where it's really useful to then find out, to do that change work with those programs that are running. So to address those programs, whatever they might be, those problems, do the change work, set positive forward intentions, and then I will bring you back out into conscious state again. So it's a really useful tool, but hypnosis itself is just literally taking you into that state.
Yeah.
It's what you do within that state. So that's why then there's the CBT, there's the NLP, there's basic talk therapy. So once you're in that subconscious state, that's where the work can be done.
Yeah, and I guess that is where the change happens. I mean, it's so interesting what you say. Yeah, because it is, you know, I mean, we think our consciousness is actually us, but actually it is just really literally the tip of the iceberg, you know, and just resonate with what you're saying. I mean, people do have, you know, I mean, it's just common. It's probably true of all of us. We have these scripts that play, don't we? You know, and common ones might be something like not good enough. And that could possibly probably come from family system. I mean, we all have these scripts, but if we don't see them, then they're guiding our life because they're really powerful, aren't they?
Yeah.
But if we don't see them, then they can guide our life and we can be in these situations and think, why do I feel this way? But I guess with hypnotherapy, you get the client to go deep into their subconscious and you kind of work there, really?
Yes, absolutely, yes.
But yeah.
They're doing the work. That's the important thing for them to understand that they're doing the change work. I'm not doing anything to them. I'm making suggestions to the subconscious.
Yeah.
But I'm not, if there's no risk that they can do something that they don't want to do, or say something that they don't want to do, or reveal anything that they don't want to, they still always have control, but it's a very focused form of therapy.
Yeah, and I think that's so important to say, to pick up on what you were saying earlier. People that, you know, are not in the profession, that they often think hypnotherapy is what they see on the stage, you know, someone getting up and then, you know, dancing around like a chicken or something against their will, you know, but that is nothing to do with hypnotherapy. But I guess people walk into your consulting room with those ideas, do they, that somehow you can manage them?
But I think the thing to always remember, because this was a question I had very early on when I went into hypnotherapy, was, well, why does that happen then? What, how can these people be dancing on a stage pretending they're a chicken or whatever? But you have to remember that those people have bought a ticket to that show. They're already bought into that concept. Yeah. They want to be entertained. And there is actually a sort of filtering system of who they're going to work with within that show. So those people that are becoming a chicken or what ballerina or whatever it is are very much bought into that. So they're not actually doing anything that they don't want to do. That it's just not possible. It's just a form of accessing the subconscious in a way that you are making positive decision statements to them. They're making the decisions whether to go with those positive changes or not. But there is. The choice is always theirs, but you just have to remember that those people on stage are bought into that process.
Absolutely. You know, they want to be the chicken, don't they, or whatever. I mean, can I ask you about? I mean, what's the first part? So, if someone comes in, I'm guessing will they lay down? Will they sit down? And then, how do you bring them into the
First session is always consultation, but it's a fact finding. So it's just a chat, finding out what the problem is, what they perceive the problem is, when the problem started. That's always the biggest clue. When did it start? Or when do they remember not feeling that way? Because that's usually where the learnt behaviour came from. So finding, fact finding, when, where, how it's affecting them, and then I'll decide which treatment I think that will be best, because there's lots of different things within hypnotherapy that I can use. So we have something called Rewind, which is the main one that I would use for trauma.
I'm going to ask you about that.
PTSD. Obviously, I do a weight management program. I don't like to use the word weight loss, although that is what people are coming for. So I might use, I've trained in virtual gastric band, but really with, whether it's drinking, whether it's losing yourself, whether it's self-harming, whether it's eating disorders, whatever it is a coping mechanism for something.
Definitely, and
so really it's finding out what the coping mechanism is, what's causing it, what's the learnt belief that's causing that behavior, finding out where it happened, when it happened, all the emotions going on at that time, and then I've got something to work with. So then they would come back to me if they're physically coming back to me, or if it's a Zoom session, because I work online as well. It's usually about a week later they'll come back, and I have, probably see behind me, I have my reclining chair. So they just get really, really comfortable, and I take them down into state of hypnosis, do the change work. Usually takes around an hour, bring them back out, and then depending on the treatment, we then go on from there the following week. But some things only take one session. Yeah. Some things might take 4 or 5. It really just depends on the complexity of what it is that someone's come to see me for. Because the other thing to sort of say about the subconscious is we take in it's every single thing that we've ever learned and everything that we see.
Absolutely.
And everything associated with that event. So sort of with trauma, it might be at the time of the event that it was the type of weather or the way the wind was blowing or gravel on the floor or a certain brick color or something.
Definitely.
That we're totally unaware that is actually a trigger in our daily lives that's putting us, activating the sympathetic nervous system, putting us on high alert. I find it fascinating how we store so much information that we're just not aware of. So again, hypnotherapy is such a good way of actually accessing things that we don't remember, because again, blocking things out is another coping mechanism.
For sure. It's
particularly in young children, because they can't remove themselves from a situation. They can't stop or control a situation. So the only thing they can do is mentally remove themselves.
Yeah.
But actually being able to realize where this pattern of thinking has come from, it can be such a release and help for people.
Yeah. And I have to say, you know, I've had hypnotherapy myself a few years ago, and goodness me, it's a really creative space, isn't it? I felt completely in control. I could have got up and I could have chalked, or I could have left the room at any time. But that being said, the depth, it's really difficult to explain how it feels subjectively, but you just feel like you drop into a really altered state of consciousness. It's really, really powerful. I found it to be tremendously powerful. I mean, I wanted to pick up on rewind therapy, because I know you work a lot with PTSD, and could you say a little bit more about what that is? Yeah, rewind therapy, yeah.
Rewind, I think, is one of my favourite treatments, which makes me feel a bit, I shouldn't get excited about rewind.
Well, it's probably powerful, right? It works, which is probably why you like it. Yeah.
So you will know yourself, but when we experience PTSD, trauma, but particularly PTSD, the way that the brain stores our memories, so we've got the hippocampus and the amygdala, and they should, so one's storing physical and emotional memory, and the other is storing the sort of timestamp part of that. And they should work together when an event happens. So we should be able to remember back, think about that awful event, but in our mind, it's something in the past. When someone is going through extreme trauma, something goes wrong in the way that memory is stored.
Yeah.
So it's stored in, and I always get these two muddled up, so I've written it down, the amygdala. So it's stored in the amygdala, but the hippocampus isn't being activated, so it's not time stamping it.
Okay.
So you're very much in that state. So you've also got the sympathetic nervous system, and you're in high alert all the time. So you've got all those triggers going all the time, and you're very much in it. So it's a physical reaction happening all the time.
Yeah, for sure.
And I like the analogy. So you might remember being drunk at a party, and it was you were young, and it was a bottle of cider, and you can remember going to buy that bottle of cider. You could see that bottle of cider in a shop. You can look at that bottle. You've got a visual memory. You've got a memory of that event. You think, oh gosh, yeah, what an awful memory. As soon as you uncap that bottle and smell that, whew, you're back there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's an example of how it's been time stamped, but then you're activating that part of the memory that puts you back there. So someone who's going through PTSD is very much in that whew, all the time. So to be able to help them time stamp, rewind therapy is It's leaning on the use of, it's an NLP technique, neuro-linguistic programming, but there are, it's also cognitive behavioral as well.
Yeah.
But what you do is actually go through the memory from start to finish, from the start of it happening to where you felt safe. And you go through it in your mind, looking at it from the outside, as if it was on a film screen, television screen, whatever. So you physically, in your mind, this is under a state of hypnosis, are watching that, but with a physical distance. You go through it very, very fast.
Feeling safe. Yeah.
You go through it very, very fast. You rewind back through it. So you replay it back very, very fast in reverse, which seems the strangest thing. And you do that several times, always ending up at the place where you feel safe, and then the place of watching yourself in a safe place.
Yeah.
And that actually scrambles that memory, but it actually allows that activation to timestamp it.
Yeah.
So after you've been through rewind therapy, you will still remember the whole event, but it will allow that timestamping to actually come into play in the brain, which means that it becomes something that really not very nice that happened in the past, rather than this constant state of activation. So it's really, really useful. And it's really useful also for someone that's very uncomfortable, so I don't need to know what the trauma is. It does not need to be revealed to me at all. Well, you know, we can give it a code name, something really simple, so we both know what we're talking about, but I do not need to know the details. So for some people that don't want to have to share, it feels very,
it must feel safer for them. Yeah,
it's just really nice because they just don't need to divulge at all. They can still have the therapy, they can still have the treatment without having to feel, you know, I don't want anyone to know about this. So I find it's really, really useful for that. And I've found such, even I was sort of like, oh wow, amazing results from it. And I've been through it myself, and it's sort of like, you sort of think, is this really going to work? But it does.
Yeah, I mean, the going through it yourself, I think, is, you know, I mean, that's so helpful, I think, isn't it? And yeah, and the time stamping, I mean, I guess that is so essential, isn't it? Because I mean, just as you say, you know, with PTSD, with trauma, you know, we get a trigger, it could be anything, it could be a bit of gravel, it could be a bird singing. I mean, literally, it could be anything that was going on during the initial event. And our brain doesn't understand that we are maybe 20 years in the future now. And so the reaction that comes is like exactly the same reaction that came at the time. And I guess with the stepping away from it and with the rewinding, you're putting a timestamp. So then when the person thinks about it, you know, I mean, obviously, it's still really, really difficult to think about, unpleasant, but it's part of the story of me rather than happening right now. And that must be a real game changer, because I mean, PTSD, hypervigilance, I mean, everything that comes with it. I mean, it makes people's lives totally unmanageable, doesn't it? You know, and as you said, people use all sorts of coping strategies for it, you know, but, you know, to be, I mean, goodness me, it must be so powerful when somebody leaves your consulting room and they're kind of free of the symptoms of PTSD in the moment. I mean, that's, must be very satisfying. I mean, it must be amazing for them. So some of these people have probably had these symptoms for years, right? Yeah, amazing. Yeah, I mean, really, really satisfying. I mean, in terms of the NLP, we don't have to go into this in any detail, but could, just for our listeners who don't understand what it is, could you just really briefly just say what it is? Just what is NLP?
NLP is basically the study and the treatment of the way that we talk to ourselves.
Okay.
And the way that we frame the world. So so Pavlov's dogs. So NLP is what brings in what's called anchoring. So Pavlov's dogs is a really good example of anchoring. So most people know the story of Pavlov's dogs, the dogs that were fed with the bell until eventually they could hear a bell and they would salivate without there being any food. With anchoring, which again we use through hypnosis, but is actually an NLP technique. We could use anything. It could be snapping a band on the wrist or pressing the hand in a certain way.
Yeah, that's common, that actually, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes, to anchor in a positive thought. So, for instance, someone that's dealing in a stressful situation or anxiety or whatever, it could just simply be, I'm safe. You ping the band, I'm safe. And that feeling of safety will physically come over the body, because another big part of what I like to explain to people is that the mind and the body are not actually separate. We are one. And it most people sort of think that everything's in our heads. We live in our heads, and all of those positive and negative chemicals that are going around in our brains, dopamine, whatever, are in the head. They're actually made in the body. And it's the speed of the signal between the two. So NLP is mind mapping again as well, which again is basically how the subconscious has laid down beliefs about the world, but it's looking at those maps, those beliefs of the world, and saying, well, you know, is that actually true? Is that factually true, or is that just your perception? So breaking those beliefs verbally, but obviously doing it through hypnosis, combining the two, it can be a really powerful way of making changes in our thought patterns.
Really kind of increasing the level of depth as well. Because I guess NLP can be used without the hypnosis. I mean, similarly with CBT, I mean, I guess if you're working at that level of depth, I guess, you know, presumably everything potentially happens quicker. And what you're saying, I mean, we said this when we had the meeting before the before we did the show, you know, this separation that medicine makes between mind and body, I mean, it's just not true, is it? You know, mind, I mean, it's all one, isn't it? And this is the holistic part in your work, isn't it? You know, I mean, you do work very holistically, don't you, with your clients?
That was why it was very important to bring in the name holistic. Because it's, although it is a study of the mind, it is the whole. It is the whole body. I mean, anxiety is a great one for that, because anxiety is stored in the body. It's the signals then sent to the mind of high alert, taking us back to caveman thinking. We are pre-programmed, that negative bias, we are pre-programmed to look for danger. So that physical sensation goes up to the brain, and the brain naturally goes, "Ooh, what? What is it?" And we want to make sense. So we will attach a thought. Oh, I'm feeling like this because I'm worried about. That then sends the signal back to the body, a little bit more adrenaline's released, and off we go. So it's I think once you sort of explain that to people, it's really easy for them to understand how they can spiral in this way. And actually, just by I bring in breath work, mindfulness, meditation, but just taking a moment, and I've experienced it myself many times, where you get that butterfly feeling, that anxiety, and just sit and watch it and just feel it. It is literally a physical feeling. There is no thought attached to it. The mind is very desperate to attach a thought to it, a reason to it, because we're pre-programmed to, but actually it's a physical feeling. And once you sort of got your understanding of that, it's a lot easier to just breathe through it and allow it to dissipate, or move, get outside. I say go outside, move, get out in nature, get some fresh air, get some movement in the muscles. Again, muscles, as they're moving, they're actually mopping up a lot of these chemicals.
I mean, that's literally true, isn't it?
It's treating the whole body. But yes, one of the simplest things is get out and walk, get some fresh air. If you can get into nature, trees. Again, it's got this sort of bad reputation of tree huggers and things, but it's just quantum physics. We're all atoms. It's all energy. It's an energy exchange, in the same way that someone will come in a room who's got a negative energy and affects you. you can go out into nature, and the energy from nature equally can affect you, and it is just so powerful.
Yeah, I mean, the being in nature, you know, I mean, I'm not going to maybe talk about this too much because, you know, our listeners are probably really tired of me talking about it. But, you know, I mean, I live like, you know, I mean, I can be, I mean, unfortunately, I live near like a kind of ancient wood nowadays, and I can wake up and I can feel sketchy, you know, I can feel maybe a bit anxious or whatever. You know, I go for a walk in that wood, I come out, I feel completely different. You know, being in nature, which where we're meant to be, isn't it? You know, we're meant to be in nature, and there's all loads of research about the interaction with trees and the immune system, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, it is, you know, it is fantastic. And if we could be mindful in nature, then all the better. I mean, if we can really, really show up. I mean, I'm conscious of the time, and I'm wanting to just quickly cover the other things, two of the other things that you bring. Could you say a little bit about the alcohol-free coaching? Because some of our listeners might be really interested in that. Just say a little bit about, you know, what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So I trained as an alcohol-free coach. It's aimed at anybody. So whether it's you just want to take a break from alcohol, see how you feel. Lots of people do these days with Dry January. Or it might be someone that's feeling, I just don't want this in my life, but I'm finding it very difficult to give up.
Yeah.
It's mostly aimed at that mid-lane drinker. So a few drinks a week, a few drinks at the weekend. I don't work with someone who is, so I would assess the amount that they're drinking, their body mass, etc.
Yeah.
I can't work with someone who is actually an alcoholic until they are dry from drinking for 2 weeks, then I can work with them.
Okay.
But it's just dangerous if their alcohol consumption is very high to just stop. That needs to be medically reduced. Once they have not drunk for 2 weeks, then I can work with them. But again, alcohol is something that is so endemic in our society that any
it is
celebration, commiseration, weekend, weeknight, absolutely everything.
It's so true.
And alcohol, some people can, you know, have it, take it or leave it, have it now and then, and it doesn't affect them, but many people are drinking and it's affecting your adrenal glands. Alcohol itself, because it's a liquid, penetrates every cell in the body, so it is causing so much physical damage. It's already been linked to 8 cancers that they know of. Absolutely.
Wow.
It's the biggest cause of breast cancer in women, yet so many women do not know that, and I find that frightening.
No, I didn't know that either. No.
But there are 8 cancers that absolutely it is known to cause. But there's so many people that because it's society norm to drink, will have a drink regularly, but it's not helping them. They're not, you know, they're sort of on a level 5. They're dealing with hangovers. They're tired. They can't be botheredness. The effects that actually alcohol has, and alcohol actually that high, I mean, no one's denying it can make people feel relaxed, it can make them feel really good, but that can actually only physically lasts for 30 minutes in the body. So, you know, then you'll have another drink, then you'll have another drink, but you can't actually physically get to that high again. So I find that's a really interesting thing for people to know, because you're basically chasing something that's unattainable.
Definitely. Yeah.
And the detriment on your body is huge. But just drinking 2 drinks a week, drinks a week, so not massive drinks, affects your adrenal glands to the point that it's bringing everything down. So your base level of the happy hormones is already suppressed. So many people drink because they're depressed, because they feel down, and actually they don't stand a chance. It's bringing everything much, much further down. Plus, you've got the hangover, you've got the sluggishness, you've got the I can't be botheredness. So, I mean, for me, when I first, I've tried several times to stop drinking. I wasn't an alcoholic. I didn't fit into any of those categories. I didn't actually drink a large amount of alcohol, but I was perpetuating a habit that I could see was not helping me. It was not making me feel well. I didn't like having hangovers. It just sort of had a blanket of meh on my life.
Yeah.
But I still felt like I had to keep doing this thing. And I would do Dry January. I've feel great. I think the year before I actually stopped, I'd done Dry January. I'd done 6 weeks instead of the four. And then thought, you know, stop being silly. Come on, have a drink. Because the
message, it's a lot of peer pressure, isn't it?
The message of society is so strong.
Yeah,
come
so
on,
true.
Stop being so silly. I mean, it's the only drug that people will question why you're not taking it. I mean,
so
I just
true.
Flip it to heroin. Who gives their children a bit of heroin so that they can get used to it?
It's
second most dangerous drug that we can take, yet it's readily available. And for myself, it was life changing because all of that just lifted. So really, the alcohol free coaching is another add on for people that are drinking. It is affecting their lives. They are perhaps struggling with stress or anxiety or depression, because it will be playing a big role in those, and they just want some help giving up, whether that's for a month, 3 months, or actually permanently.
Okay, that's really, really helpful to know. I mean, if anyone, we'll obviously put all of your links on our social media sites and along with the podcast, but if anyone wants to get hold of you for any of the things that you offer, how do they get in touch with you, Jo?
Well, I have I'm on Facebook and I'm on Instagram, and I have my website. So on Instagram, I'm life.holistic clinical hypnotherapy, meditation and breath work. Bit of a mouthful, that one, but on Facebook I'm just life.holistic clinical hypnotherapy, and then my website is lifeholistictherapy.com. So
brilliant, thank
quite
you.
Quite a bit to thank remember you. But
but we'll, as I say, we'll put all of your links and all our social media sites. Well, I always, the last question I always ask our guests, and we have gone over a little bit, I hope it's okay, but this will be the last question, is what are your go-to coping strategies for sustaining your own good mental health? I mean, what do you do every week to sustain good mental health? Yeah.
For myself, it is movement. So I do exercise regularly, but even if it's just going out for a walk. I have dogs, so I have to go out for a walk.
Always a good excuse.
And walking, moving, getting some fresh air, changing your environment. Meditation, I try and meditate every day. Again, don't beat myself up if I miss a day, but meditation I find really, really helpful to separate yourself. I am not my thoughts. You know, it is a really, really good tool. And then the third one actually is something that I've only been doing for the last year, which is a gratitude diary. Just writing down a handful of things that you're grateful for that day. So it could just be five things. It could be just the sun is shining. I got dressed. It can be the simplest things, but it is, again, it's training the brain to look for the positive. And the more that you think about it, the more that you will find, which again is just making that shift into how you see the world, how you map out the world, the choices that you make.
I have similar coping strategies. Yeah, the meditation, I mean, maybe at some stage we'll maybe have you back and talk a bit more about that. I mean, that can be a game changer, can't it? Once you realize that you can't believe what you know, the thoughts your mind is producing, I mean, that is a complete game changer, but it does take a bit of practice. And the getting out and exercising, I mean, even just a walk, I think, is so helpful, isn't it? Especially for people that, you know, maybe feeling low mood, just getting out into the flow of life, I think, is really good. Loads of research behind gratitude diary. And just as you say, you know, we have this negativity bias, but what we're doing with gratitude, we're switching it out to look for things that we're grateful for. Before we finish, is there anything that you would have liked to have said that I've not given you the opportunity to, Joe, before we end?
Only just to bring in the breath work. There's many different styles of breath work. In my practice, I'm tending to use, I'm not sure how much people are aware or yourself is aware of breath work, but you can our sort of sessions where you are doing very, very aggressive breathing, and you're being taken into, you're basically doing the same thing that you're doing in hypnotherapy. You're switching off the conscious mind and accessing the subconscious through breath work. What I tend to use in my practice is I will do some breathing exercises to activate the parasympathetic nervous system with people, so taking them out of fight or flight or whatever that they're feeling at the time, and actually activating that rest and digest before we then start the session, because some people, you know, just actually coming to see me might be activating fight or flight. So it's a really physical way of calming them down. And it's also something really nice to give them a little practice to take away that they can do at home. So really, really simple one would be the box breathing, which you may or may not have heard of, which is just breathing in for five, holding the breath for five, releasing for five, and holding that out breath for five. And you might do 10 rounds of that. And that basically activates the parasympathetic nervous system, puts you back into rest and digest, which brings everything down when you're in that state of panic. So it's really, really useful.
Yeah, I mean, breath work is something I don't know that much about, honestly, but goodness me, it sounds really, really powerful. Yeah, I mean, we've had a few guests on before that have talked about breath work, and it does sound like, in so many different ways, a really, really powerful exercise that people can incorporate into their lives. So, yeah. Okay, we'll finish there, Joe. I just want to say thank you so much for coming on, and it's been really nice to see you again.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been really nice. I hope I haven't chewed your head off with...
No, it's been great. It's been great. And once again, I'd like to really, really thank Joe for coming on the show. And I think our listeners will agree, what a really, really interesting interview. Joe brings so much to the table in terms of different kind of techniques that I'm kind of glad that we were able to cover some of them. I would have also liked to have asked Joe, if we'd have had more time, a little bit more about the hypnosis and the virtual gastric band. We could have also opened up mindfulness, CBT, NLP some more. I mean, Joe brings, you know, not only a lot of life experience into the work, you know, but also, you know, a lot of training in different areas, and thus, you know, her holistic approach. And, you know, I had to absolutely agree with Joe. I mean, this idea of the separation of body and mind, I mean, dare I say the medical model? I mean, the body and mind are holistic systems, aren't we? One affects the other. I mean, Joe was talking about anxiety. Yeah, I mean, I think that it's the perfect example. You know, we feel anxiety in the body, don't we? You know, but there is a mental component to it. I think often people, whether the mental or the physical comes first, I think often people get into a feedback loop. The anxiety fuels the catastrophic thinking, which fuels the anxiety, and people kind of get into this loop, you know, as Joe was saying in the interview, some of the techniques in order to break that loop, mindfulness kind of being one of them, breath work possibly being another, you know, certainly the hypnosis can be massive, massively helpful. And Joe, you know, another practitioner, which I think is so familiar to most people that work in this field, you know, transforming, you know, some difficult personal experiences into a profession around kind of helping others, which I always think is, you know, a really, really wonderful thing. We've got another episode coming up really soon with Matthew Starrett, and we're going to be talking around attachment theory, still staying with the topic of relationships. Got a few more very good shows coming up. Not going to say much about them at this point, but it should be a really, really good series. I mean, it's, you know, really, really turning into that already, and we've only done a couple of shows. Just want to also thank Joe, who tirelessly works in the background in so many different ways, not only of the editing of the podcast and the YouTube, you know, but also looking into many, many different kind of areas, you know, suggesting guests. I mean, as I always say, it is very much a collaborative effort, although Joe kind of is in the background, although he did appear on a few of the shows at the end of season 4, which is always good and always gets a lot of hits. So yeah, I'm going to try and get Joe on maybe for a show in season 5, see if I can twist his arm. And as I often say, you know, we have, you know, we've had 5,000 listens on audio, but you know, not everyone subscribes. I think that is common. If you are enjoying the show, you know, on YouTube or indeed, you know, on audio where it is a lot more popular, please do subscribe. You know, it helps us out in so many different ways. And I guess the more our numbers come up, kind of the more exciting guests, you know, we can offer you. So anyway, as I always say at the end of every show, look after yourself, look after each other, look after the planet. And I'll be back really shortly with the next episode. You take care of yourselves. Hashtag.